Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, now's the time with our best offer ever. Sign up today and you'll pay just £1 a month for the next 6 months, giving you unrivaled insight and analysis of everything Euro 2020 and taking you well into the new Premier League season too. The Athletic is the only place you can read pieces by award-winning writers like Michael Cox, Rafa Honigstein, Amy Lawrence and Daniel Taylor. And when you subscribe, you'll also get ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts from across its audio network. Head to theathletic.com/totally and become a subscriber today for £6 until the end of the year. That's theathletic.com/totally.
Good afternoon, passengers. This is a pre-boarding announcement for flight 89. Please have your boarding pass and identification ready.
Baku, Sevilla,
Amsterdam,
Glasgow,
München,
St. Petersburg,
Bucharest,
Budapest, Copenhagen,
Roma, London.
Unbelievable. Totally Football Show. Day 4 at Euro 2020 and Scotland are in the shick after Patrick's Perla. Spain pass and pass and pass and miss against Sweden, while Slovakia versus Poland features a breakout performance from Emma Hayes. We'll also preview Tuesday's action as the much-anticipated Group of F gets underway. That's all to come on this episode of the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello there, listener. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, back again as Euro 2020 rolls on. I'm joined for this latest tour of Europe by the analyst from The Analyst, Dr. Joe, oily sailor, a man of many monikers and a friend of ours. It's Duncan Alexander. Hi, Duncan.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, thanks. I thought you'd enjoy that vaguely Sopranos adjacent end to your intro there. Also with us from The Athletic and its non-award-winning Chelsea podcast straight out of Cobham, Dominic Fifield. Presumably, Dom, you were rooting for Poland earlier, given that they're the Eagles, but then Sweden are Palace's international soulmates?
I tell you what, that was a Roy Hodgson-esque Swedish performance. It was like watching Crystal Palace last season. That absolutely created two really good chances with 21% of the ball. Absolutely perfect. He would have been sitting at his Riverside place in Richmond, purring at that. And the only thing that was missing really was Ray Lewington in shorts bellowing over the crowd noise from the sidelines. It was superb.
If only Sweden had had Christian Benteke, it still would have finished 0-0, etc. and so on. Right, since we last met, we've heard from Christian Eriksen, who continues to recover from the cardiac arrest he suffered on Saturday. He released a brief statement on Monday morning in which he said, "Thank you, I won't give up, I feel better now, but I want to understand what's happened." And meanwhile, the Denmark coach Kasper Juhlmann has said he now believes Saturday's game against Finland shouldn't have been restarted after the incident. Kasper Schmeichel feels the same. The Danes' next match is against Belgium on Thursday. Elsewhere, on last night's pod, we wondered what had got Marko Arnautović so angry after he scored in Austria's defeat of North Macedonia. Reports stated he directed his fury at some North Macedonian players who've got Albanian roots, allegedly using some ripe and racially insensitive language. This prompted the former Stoke and West Ham man to issue a statement on social media. He said, "There were some heated words yesterday in the emotions of the game, for which I'd like to apologise, especially to my friends from North Macedonia and Albania. I'd like to say one thing very clearly. I'm not a racist. I have friends in almost every country and I stand for diversity. Everyone who knows me is aware of that." Dom, the old "I have friends, etc. and so on" is never a good line. And I feel like we've probably not heard the last of this.
No, I imagine it will rumble on. As you say, that you do wince a bit when you hear that particular excuse used, but we'll see where it goes.
It's the old, if you're typing out "I am not a racist" on Instagram stories, it's, you know, posing more questions than you're trying to answer. So,
We should probably move on to Monday's action, starting in Glasgow.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, Scotland couldn't come home too soon because they were already at home, but it wasn't the glorious return to tournament football that the Tartan Army had hoped for as they went down 2-0 to the Czech Republic at Hampden Park. About 9,000 fans in attendance, according to the BBC, 12,000 were expected. Patrick Schick put the visitors ahead just before the break. Great cross from Sue Fowle, which had West Ham supporters purring. Then, 7 minutes after half-time, Schick did this.
Hendry with the shot. Now the break might be on for Patrick Schick, and look what he's trying to do. Schick, oh! Wow. Can you believe what we've just seen? Out of this world from Patrick Schick.
Duncan, it was the longest goal in Euros history, but longest in actual terms rather than what young people might expect a longest goal to be.
Yeah, 49.7 yards, which is good. I mean, obviously, XG enthusiasts were outraged when they saw it because it only had a 2% chance. But I don't know if a shot can have a theoretical 2% chance, but then about an 86% chance once you've hit it. Because I've never seen... Because that photograph where he, from behind Schick, he hits it way, way to the left of the goal and then it just bends and dips down. Yeah, and then it was obviously helped massively aesthetically by the sight of David Marshall just, you know, careering, not into the net, but just beyond the net. The net, the amount of sag the net had was extraordinary. But yeah, just a classic goal, really.
Yeah, Schick happens, but that's not much comfort to David Marshall.
How many can we get in, Matt?
There'll be more, don't worry. Some people call it, I see the BBC running a poll asking if that's the greatest goal in Euros history. That feels like a bit of recency bias. I mean, it was pretty special, but I'm still thinking Karol Poborski.
Marco van Basten, 88, I think, probably just pips it. But it was fantastic. The way that it didn't loop into the net. It careered into the back of the net from 49 point. How many? 7 yards, was it?
Just
magnificent. I mean, yeah, you do feel sorry for David Marshall, and I guess he had to be outside his area in an attempt to snuff out a Czech counter attack. But it was a magnificent.
He was very far up the pitch, wasn't he? I mean, he was almost on the centre circle. And Schick did say afterwards that he had spotted that in the first half, and he was kind of waiting to see if an opportunity would arise. You know, there are players. Xabi Alonso is a good example of players who did kind of make a specialty of scoring that sort of goal. But to do it in that game. And it's just Scotland, you know, lots of fans of lots of different teams think that they are unlucky. You know, Spurs fans, lots of people go, oh, you know, my team is unlucky. Scotland genuinely are. If you look through their history of you know, tournament stuff, they really do just grab despair from the jaws of victory. I mean, I was looking during the Spain game, which we'll get onto, because it still rankles with me that Spain only scored 8 goals when they won the World Cup in 2010. And I hadn't realised that Scotland scored 8 goals in the group stage in 1982. Still didn't get through. It's just, you know, it was a shame because he said the atmosphere before the game was really good and, you know, first tournament game for so long. And, I mean, I guess the, you know, the upside is that they're not out yet because of the structure, but it does look quite hard now.
What was their XG, Duncan? Because they had loads of chances.
They were on 1.9 to 0.9 for the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic were quite low. They got a few chances towards the end, which boosted it up a bit. And in a normal replay of that game, seven, eight times out of ten, Scotland would have won or at least got a draw. But this is the reality we're in. So yeah,
I mean, like, I know that's what the. This is what I have an issue with, this because I still look at that Scotland team and I wonder. Yeah, they might create chances, but 8 times out of 10, if they still played that team, I'm not sure they would put them away in any of those games. I mean, they create the quality, fine. But, you know, the temptation at the end of the game was to suggest that the Czech Republic, who have been to so many more major tournaments in the last 23 years than Scotland have, were simply more streetwise, and that they knew how to win that game on that occasion. But the reality was, they won the game because they had the ruthless striker on show. I mean, the first goal is a fantastic header. I mean, he gets up above Grant Hanley, I think, and absolutely buries it. It's a brilliant, brilliant header. I mean, you can criticise the defending and allowing Suchek to get the cross in, but he's put that away. And there was nobody really in Scottish ranks who looked anything like capable of doing the same thing. So 8 times out of 10, I don't think they would have won that game with that selection.
No, that's fair. I think, you know, possibly Scotland's most effective striker at the Euros is doing co-commentary for ITV. So, yeah.
For sure.
Dom, we kind of, I say we, I mean I, bigged up Steve Clarke yesterday. Did he get out-street wisdomed by his opposite number? Obviously losing Kieran Tierney was a big blow, but Shea Adams looked great when he came on at half-time, and should he have started the match? It's easy to say that afterwards, I guess.
Yeah, and it is easy to say that, and I think Lyndon Dykes has been in sort of integral to how they've been playing in games, and yeah, they're not picking him as a striker who's going to score them loads of goals, but he's sort of been key to how the team shape and how, you know, their targets, etc. Obviously, when you take out one of the two world-class players in that team, or potentially world-class players in that team, it's going to make a massive, massive difference. Robertson was superb, particularly in the first half. And if they'd had the option of Tierney overloading as well and making life uncomfortable for the Czechs on that side, they might have caused more problems. They might have created even better chances and even chances that Lyndon Dykes could put away. But as it was, you can be critical of the substitutions, possibly. I mean, there was a lot of outcry for Billy Gilmour, wasn't there, to get more busy, a bit of busyness in that midfield. But again, you'd be taking a risk because it's, you know, he's a kid. He's not played at a major tournament before, like all these guys. And you know, whether they hit the ground running or not, well, you just don't know. But I'd imagine there will have to be changes in the way they approach it at Wembley later this week. I felt sorry for them because the sense of anticlimax was palpable. And you know, the second goal, as much as we could all sit there and relish the beauty of it as a piece of finishing, it absolutely sucked all belief out of the crowd who'd been magnificent up to then. And God, that place rocks with 9,000, let alone 40,000. And it's an amazing, amazing arena. But no, I felt for them.
Yeah, it's a kind of not really acknowledged slight issue with these sort of quarter full grounds is that when everyone's on it at the start, it does sound almost similar to when they're full. But as soon as the game starts going bad, we saw it in the Spain game as well, it suddenly goes silent and properly silent. And you can really hear the players shouting and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, Andy Robertson was, to back up Dom's conversion point again, you know, he kept mentioning the word clinical in the post-match interview. He was obviously, shall we say, frustrated at his colleagues' inability to take chances. So
Robertson was interesting as well, with particularly in that first half when he sort of seemed to be trying to calm his teammates down, and you could actually see him sort of just, you know, just take a breath and let's try and get our game heads on here, because he there was a sort of franticness about it all, which maybe, I mean, we've seen it in a few games in fairness. A lot of teams have started very, very frantically. England probably started very frantically as well, but there was slightly more pattern to the way England performed in those early exchanges. And maybe, again, it comes down to shape and balance and the fact that you've got a centre-forward on the pitch who can get you goals and that teammates have faith that can get you goals as well. Because once Suchet did his job on John McGinn as well, and McGinn really faded badly, like a lot of those Scottish players, that didn't seem to be any way that the Scots were going to prise them apart for all that they were creating half chances left, right and centre.
That puts added pressure on Scotland ahead of the game at Wembley on Friday, but Czech Republic looking good for a place in the knockout stages. Right, next today, we'll get to the Group E action on Monday night.
Euros are here, and you'd better make the most of them because they only come around every 4, 5 years. So, if your bookie isn't making you feel special, then maybe it's time to find a new one. Yep, not so much carpe diem as carpadium, yeah? If the grass is greener on the other side, come and play on it. If your bookie's not giving you the best rewards, switch and you'll get a completely free £5 bet builder on all England's group games. Paddy Power. Pre-match bet builder bets only min 2 plus legs online exclusive. Must have previously deposited to avail. T's and C's apply. 18+.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah.
Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
No winner in the game between Spain and Sweden in Seville, other than Slovakia, maybe. Duncan, that first half was made for stats, if not for goals. Spain did a lot of passes.
Yeah, I mean, at half-time, Spain had already completed 419 passes, which was more than England and Croatia did, for instance, in their entire game. Sweden were on 59. So, you know, they completed, I think, two passes in the opposition half in the first 20 minutes. In the first 13 minutes of the game, Paul Simon had as many touches of the ball as Unai Simon. yeah, it was a fairly dominant possession performance from Spain. But as we've seen many times in tournaments, they didn't really carve out that many good chances. And, you know, I know that Alvaro was pretty down on them in the preview last week, and you could see why. They seem like a team that kind of know that they have had this scoring issue in international tournaments, and it's almost like they can't change the way they're set up. But you could see them getting more frustrated as time went by. And, you know, Alvaro Morata was there doing, you know, his sort of finishes. And, yeah, it's not a disaster. I mean, they're fine, 0-0. But it was, not the start that kind of would engender a kind of tournament belief amongst supporters.
We mentioned about Morata, Tom, on yesterday's show, and the fact that Daniel Story was saying Gerard Moreno probably deserved the start ahead of him. And yeah, that chance was, as Duncan says, kind of Morata's signature move, wasn't it? And every time he misses one, you just can sort of visibly see more and more confidence seeping out of him to the point where he's probably got very little of it left.
He shrinks, doesn't he? He sort of diminishes with each missed opportunity. And it's when he has a chance to think about what he's got to do to finish the move, or to provide the finish, it almost plays on his mind and he chokes. But we have seen that before. We saw that. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised at how he stayed onside today, which seemed like progress from his Chelsea days, if I'm honest. And Moreno did actually make a difference. I know there was the chance later on which he probably should have buried again. Olsen did well to keep that one out. But he just seemed a bit more of a threat. He carried more of a threat. He had more movement. He injected a bit of pace and urgency into that Spain performance that actually was meandering at that point. And I wonder whether that might be the way to go in future games. I agree with Duncan. Obviously, it's very early days, and you know, it's not a disaster to draw your first game and start a tournament slowly. And plenty of teams have done that and gone on to win them. And we also need to maybe it's a apt reminder that this is a Spain team. It's a work in progress. It's got really young players in there. They're not the finished article at all. And you know, as the tournament goes on and they get more experience in this and more familiarity with each other and learn to cope better with all the disruption of their build-up, which has been huge. I mean, absolutely huge. maybe they'll find more rhythm and they will start opening teams up better and taking those opportunities. So I'm not worried about them particularly, but I'd rather say, what a magnificent defensive performance from the Swedes. Absolutely. 4-4-2. Whenever the Spain were in possession, you could just see that the barriers being flung down, the two banks of four and those two strikers just working their socks off. And to do that without seeing any of the ball and yet hit the post and miss an open goal in the second half, both chances created by Isaac, who looks an absolute gem, yeah, doesn't he, in the making. I mean, I thought they were fantastic. But I like that sort of thing. I know most people don't, but I do.
No, I support Wickham. I mean, that's probably the most pass I've ever seen in my life from Sweden, let alone from Spain. But, I mean, Spain, they ended the game with 830 completed passes, which is a Euros record, 1980 onwards. And, yeah, I mean, that is a lot of passes. But, you know, Sweden had their chances. There was one just before half-time where Isaac had a shot which kind of hit Llorente, which bounced onto the post and bounced straight up into Simon's hands, which was fortunate. I mean, there was hilarity, wasn't there, when Isaac got substituted quite late on and people were like, no, he's the good player we're enjoying. But in a lot of ways, it made sense because if he's that good, save him for the other games in the group. You know, the worst thing, if he was getting tired, if he pulled a hamstring in that game, it would have been a disaster. So you can see why they did it. But yeah, it was a funny game. But as Dom said, a lot of people were raging at what was happening. But it's quite enjoyable. They're the sort of games that stick out at tournaments sometimes. You need them. Not every game can be a kind of end-to-end classic, although we do need some of those as well.
It's interesting that there's a lot of talk in the build-up about how fit this Spain team was going to be, and Luis Enrique had really worked on that, and they were going to be one of the fittest teams in the tournament. Well, Seb Larsson's 36, and he finished that game running around like a spring chicken, quite frankly. I mean, that to me was indicative of the sort of the spirit and the sense of unity in that Swedish team, and that's to be admired, to be honest.
I didn't enjoy the pitch in that game. Did you notice it? It looked
very
like
sandy,
what it was.
Wasn't it?
Well, it's a pitch in an athletic stadium. It did look like they'd just sort of, you know, painted out the javelin marks and stuff. And, you know, it was too patchy for a tournament. So, yeah.
Yeah, technical areas were too big as well. And Luis Enrique probably didn't need all of those pockets on his trousers. But at the end of the day, those two teams would probably be quite happy with a point given the way they came into this game. So that was the late game in Group E. Earlier, Poland played Slovakia. If I was to ask you what comes to mind when I say Slovakia, you'd probably say it's the home of John Bon Jovi's grandma. And you'd be right. However, the football team threatening to usurp Granny Bon Jovi as the country's most famous citizens. In St. Petersburg on Monday, they kicked off their Group E campaign with a 2-1 win against Poland, whose resolve to keep the faith with Paulo Sosa might well be tested. The winner came from Inter defender Milan Skriniar, who shot through the heart of the Poland defence. This after Wojciech Szczesny had found the ball slippery when wet. His own goal had Slovakia in front, only for Karol Linetti to level seconds after the restart. Slovakia will keep going, though, and Poland had to take some bad medicine after Gregor Krakowiak was sent off. Jimbo will be back later on
jokes.
In the tournament. Don't worry, guys.
jokes, they were better.
I found myself a couple of hours ago scrolling through Spotify looking at Bon Jovi's greatest hits, and
don't pretend you don't do that anyway on a Monday.
Obviously, the actual correct answer is Peter Sagan is the most famous man from Slovakia, but again, that probably just hammers home the size of Slovakia in some ways, but yeah.
I'm going to guess he's a cyclist.
Blank face. Yeah, he's a pretty big, famous cyclist, but yeah, so...
Massive win for Slovakia this, though, isn't it? Particularly given what happened in the other game. They probably only need another, point or two, and they'll be through to the knockouts again for the third tournament in a row.
Yeah, I mean, fans of the Velvet Revolution had a great day, didn't they, with the Czechs and the Slovaks both winning on the same afternoon. That kind of happened too often. But, yeah, I mean, it was one of those games where Poland obviously struggled in the first half, scored, 30 seconds into the second half, which is exactly what you want as a manager, and then proceeded to still blow it. And, there's been a lot of records that have kind of fallen by the wayside in this first few days of the Euros. You know, Italy have finally scored more than two, England have finally won their opening game. But Poland have got this ridiculous scoring record at the Euros where they've never scored more than one goal in a game. And I actually, you talk about Spotify there, Matt. I was looking through, because it reminded me of, you know, the song Robots by Flight of the Conchords. There's a binary solo. And if you actually read out in a chronological order, Poland scoring, it goes at the Euros. It's 0-1, 0-1-1, 0-1, 0-1-1-1. So, I mean, it's pretty close. So, yeah.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. I was talking to a friend of mine, a Polish journalist, earlier tonight in the wake of the game, and he said in Poland people say that the team always plays three games at a major tournament: their opening fixture, their last chance, and the game to save their honour. And it's pretty much going down the same route, isn't it? With Paulo Sousa in charge. I think there are a few doubts about him. I mean, he's obviously had a difficult start. I think he's only been Andorra since he's taken over at the start of the year. But it does seem to, without Milic and without Piatek there as well to offer some kind of support to Lewandowski, they just looked a bit rudderless first half. And then just as they're getting up some rhythm and a bit of a head of steam in the second, they go and get Krychowiak sent off and it's back to the wall from that moment on. I felt for them, but again, it just felt as if that's a team that's going to have no luck, and it never has any luck at a major finals.
Yeah, Lewandowski was a passenger in that game, but he probably would have got a hat-trick if he'd been wearing a Scotland shirt earlier in the day. And what was it about Emma Hayes on the mic on co-coms for ITV that everybody enjoyed so much?
I have to say, I went and met Emma last week to write a column with her for The Athletic, and she is... I mean, I don't know how to really sum it up. She's brilliant. When she talks about football and she talks about even complicated aspects of tactics, there's a clarity to it all, and she makes very, very complicated concepts very, very simple to understand, which is perfect for me. and in that scenario as well, as a co-coms, I know she's done quite a lot over the years. But she was just superb. It shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody, really, who's listened to her before.
But it's also that level of enthusiasm as well, I think. You know, it's the same, similar to McCoist in some other evenings in this tournament, where it's the kind of enjoyment of watching the game and spotting stuff and you know, bringing your experience into the co-commentary. And I think people really recognise when people do that. And I think, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think people always did. But until social media kind of came around a decade ago, there wasn't really a channel to kind of sort of make that clear. But I think now that is. And I think I would posit that the standard of commentary and co-commentary in the last 10 years has gone up a lot because, you know, I was watching some old games for a project a couple of weeks ago and had the commentary from the 90s. And it was a lot of he'll be disappointed with that just over and over again. So.
Yeah, Emma Hayes, one of the many great guest columnists that The Athletic have got for Euro 2020. And you can sign up for a subscription with The Athletic for unrivaled coverage of Euro 2020, brackets in 2021, close brackets. All the articles, all the podcasts ad-free and Q&As with writers too. Just £1 a month for your first 6 months. So head to theathletic.com/totally. So that was Monday. What about Tuesday's games? Hang fire. We'll be there in a jiffy.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, host of The England Show, brought to you daily throughout Euro 2020. I'll be joined by writers from The Athletic and special guests to bring you unrivaled coverage dedicated to the England team this summer. So for expert insight into Southgate's squad and post-game reaction to all the games, search for The England Show wherever you get your podcasts or via The Athletic app.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. McKissick helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
Group F, F for Fearful, gets underway on Tuesday. That includes the first truly titanic tussle of the tournament, France and Germany squaring up in Munich. Only the second time they've met in this competition following Les Bleus' semi-final victory 5 years ago. Duncan, as we know, writing off the Germans was banned some time ago. Would you dare to walk on the wild side in that regard?
I think there's actually been a slight reassessment of Germany in the last few days. I think everyone's been sort of, you know, saying they're going to do badly for so many weeks that suddenly everyone's like, hang on, are we walking into a huge trap? I mean, them going to a back three has kind of helped them look a bit more solid, and, you know, the different units are kind of linking up better. But, yeah, I mean, this game, I actually think it's going to, because this comes after the Portugal game, and I think the result of the Portugal game might affect how this game is played. I think if, say, Portugal drop points against Hungary, then I think both these teams will know they can pretty much go all out to try and win the match. So that could set up an absolute classic game between them. You know, it's essentially the biggest European Championships game you can have. France have got the joint most wins in the competition, and this will be Germany's 50th game, which will be more than anyone else. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
What about France, Dom? They've got this stacked squad, but does the starting 11 pretty much pick itself? I guess Tolisso or Rabiot is maybe one selection dilemma. We'll assume that Karim Benzema has not been brought back to sit on the bench.
No, and the sort of the suggestion in France is that Rabiot will get the nod in midfield, and that front three of Mbappe, Benzema and Griezmann will start the game. With Giroud to come off the bench if required and not receive any passes from Kylian. They're awesome to look at on paper. They're absolutely awesome. But this week, actually, and that little spat between Mbappe and Giroud is an indication that this will always be a team and a squad that is capable of self-destruction and you know, just imploding when they should have the world at their feet. And, you know, they're world champions, obviously, and they should be overwhelming favourites for this tournament, but just have to be wary on that. And they're making all the right noises. Hugo Lloris spoke at his press conference in Munich this evening saying that it's sort of being put to bed now, that Giroud went to find Mbappe the day after the Bulgaria game and spoke with him and explained that he said some things in the heat of the moment and that he didn't mean them in a critical way. But the very fact that it's rumbled on with Kylian Mbappe in the days since, and he's been a player that never does press conferences, suddenly does a press conference over the weekend. I mean, I think that's indicative of how stung he felt by it all. When Giroud plays, Mbappe will be further away from Giroud than he is from, say, a Benzema or a Griezmann even, because of the style of their play. And people have been, in fact, the idea that was put to Mbappe in his press conference was, you know, it's not going to be the same as playing with Neymar or playing with Griezmann when you've got Giroud on the team, because you're automatically going to be further away from him. And he sort of acknowledged that was, yeah, potentially part of the problem. But
this is the problem when you've got a squad, I think, as good as France's, with so many players in that peak, you know, age range. You know, they're not like an England with a lot of young players who, you know, prodigiously talented. But you could, if say Jadon Sancho didn't get a minute of action in the whole tournament, he wouldn't be happy about it. But I don't think it would cause like a squad meltdown. But France, they've historically had that issue sometimes, and they just feel like a squad where a lot of players will be annoyed if they don't get the sort of playing time that they think they deserve, particularly when you've already got Giroud, and then they brought Benzema back as well. So, yeah, I think for Germany, I think, you know, if they're going to be vulnerable, this might be the best time. So, again, I think it would make sense for Germany to go all out, for at least for the first 10 minutes, and see what happened.
It's a fabulous game in prospect. Didier Deschamps looking to become only the second man to win the Euros as a player and a manager. Who can tell me who the first was? I got it straight away, by the way. Not to put any pressure on, but yeah. It's one of the teams we've just been talking about. He was the manager and Klinsmann? Player of.
No, he wasn't, no.
More close.
Beckenbauer? No.
Bertie Vokes? No.
It is Bertie Vokes, yeah.
Bertie Vokes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never even imagined Bertie Vokes could be a footballer, let alone win the Euros. But
that's former Scotland known as legend Bertie Mac as well, Vokes. Obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah. That's it. That's Scotland tenure. Jeez.
Mm. Pertinent. Wow. Well, before France-Germany, the two other teams in Group F will meet in Budapest, Hungary taking on Portugal. And this will be a proper home game for the host. They'll be backed by a 100% capacity, 60,000-strong crowd at the Puskás Arena. Earlier, to talk all things Hungary, I spoke with Thomas Mortimer, founder of HungarianFootball.com. Thomas, some people might not have been keeping up to date with the Hungary team since they topped their group before going out to Belgium in the last 16 5 years ago. How have things been since then?
It's been a roller coaster, actually. We've had real lows, and we've had some real highs, to be honest. And when I say we've had some real lows, we actually lost to Andorra since the last Euros. We lost to Luxembourg. We lost to Kazakhstan, all in the same year. When the Euro qualification came around, we changed manager to Marco Rossi, who was who won the league at Honvéd in Hungary. He's been in the league a while, and also used to manage a Hungarian Slovakian team, who play in Slovakia. It's a bit complicated, but so he is kind of someone who's really thrown himself into the culture of the country, and since he's come in, he's really changed the fortunes, really. The reason why we are at this tournament is because we got in through the Nations League against Iceland. And when I say we've been to maybe as high point as we've ever been, this was probably the ultimate high, really. We were 1-0 down with 3 minutes to go. Loic Nago comes on and scores an equaliser. And then in added time, Dominic Szoboszlai picks up the ball in his own half, beats a couple of men, and then smashes one in the bottom corner to take us to the Euros. So it's been, like I say, a roller coaster, some incredible lows, and then that incredible high back in November time. And then since then, we've had three World Cup qualifiers, 1-2 against Andorra and San Marino, avenging the defeat against Andorra, and then got a 3-3 respectable draw against Poland, where we were the better team. So yeah, wild ride, to be honest.
You mentioned Szoboszlai earlier. Obviously, he's not going to be involved, and he's your kind of star man. And only 8 goals managed in qualifying, which I guess means keeping things tight at the back is going to be important. Easier said than done, given the strength of attacking opposition you'll be facing. But Hungary do have a very capable goalkeeper in Peter Gulácsi.
Yeah, Szoboszlai is a huge miss. He brings a dynamism and spark and flair, which Hungary kind of without him in the side. Roland Schalai is probably the one player who can create something from nothing. But apart from that, it's few and far between. And like you say, in qualification, we didn't score many goals. And in general, we don't really score too many goals at all. Our only player in the squad who has more than double figures is Adam Szolai, and he only scored 1 goal with Mainz this season, and he's a striker. So that kind of shows kind of where we are. Our third top scorer in the squad is Willy Orban, who's a centre half. So if we do go 1-0 down, it's going to be very troubling to get that back, and I think we will struggle for sure. But like you say, defensively we are sound, having Gulácsi, who a lot of people say is one of Europe's best goalkeepers. He's not particularly done it for Hungary, to be honest, but he is more than capable. Willy Orban, like I mentioned, he's top quality defender who was being touted as one of Bundesliga's best defenders this season, and who scored actually put him in their top five league's team of the season as well. Obviously, he's more than capable. We've got Attila Szolai, who maybe not a lot of your listeners would have heard of, but I think you might hear of him soon because he's had an incredible 6 months at Fenerbahce since moving there, and is touted to move to a top league soon. I think if he performs well over 3 games, then he'll get a move to the Premier League or the Bundesliga or something like that. And those three players in particular form a real, real base for Hungary to kind of to build upon a little bit. But they are, yeah, really, really strong players. Unfortunately, Hungary play with a back three, so the two centre halves don't play with each other, and there's going to be someone who plays either in Cyprus or in Hungary at the back with them. And that's the kind of the problem. We have some really, really fantastic players, some of Europe's best in their positions, and then we have a lot of sprinkling of players who are based in Hungary, based in Slovakia, based in Cyprus. So yeah, that is a bit of a problem for us.
Finally, Thomas, one thing that will be in your favour is the full house at the Puskás Arena, certainly for the Portugal game. How's that been made possible? Is there concern about how safe it is and how much an advantage do you think it could be?
I think it's been made possible by Orbán's love, in inverted commas, of football. Like, he's used football almost as a symbol of power, really, of his leadership. And I think to display that across Europe, I don't think he could have really turned that down. But to be fair, like, the vaccination rollout is the best in Europe, in the EU, sorry. Over half the population have been vaccinated now, and the death rate is lower than it's almost ever been since COVID became a thing. Like, there was actually no deaths in the country yesterday. So in fairness, like, they have done a very, very good job. When this was first announced, though, it was seen as being like, what is going on, basically. But they have done very well since. So I think that's how they have achieved it. And whereas, yeah, a month or two ago, it would have felt like this is a really, really dangerous thing to happen. I think now they are definitely a lot further down the road. And the atmosphere will be unbelievable, I think. I think it'll be the best. I mean, I'm almost certain it'll probably be the best atmosphere at the Euros, really. Like, having Hungary play in front of a full house anytime is an incredible sight, to be honest. The fans are just unbelievable. They're vociferous but not aggressive. They're not like crazy, like ripping up seats and going mad. They're kind of tempered vociferousness, I guess. So yeah, that will be really, really spectacular for everyone watching, and it will give Hungary a huge edge, because Hungary are good at home. Like I say, in qualifying, we beat Wales and Croatia at home, so it does make Hungary a different beast. And I think, despite the concerns that were there, I think it's something maybe to just enjoy as a fan, really.
Thomas Mortimer there. Portugal, Dom. A lot of people tipping them. João Cancelo's not involved. Diego Dalo has come in for him after Cancelo tested positive for COVID-19. They've got the top scorer in Serie A, the second highest scorer in the Bundesliga, and the third highest scorer in the Premier League. They're all encouraging stats, but is there a danger they'll just be too knackered? I know that's a thing for everybody, but, you know, Fernandes fatigue was a talking point throughout last season. Ronaldo's 36, João Moutinho's 34, Pepe, if he plays, 38, Ruben Dias and Bernardo Silva played right up until the end of the season in the Champions League final. Do you think that they've got enough depth in the squad to get through the group and get into the latter stages again?
Well, they didn't have enough, the same level of depth in 2016, and they won that one.
So, but they're in an easier group then, weren't they? So they had a softer start to the tournament, and they could kind of stumble their way through the group stage.
It may galvanise them, and a lot of these guys will be in a certain rhythm at the start of the group, so maybe that will benefit them. I just look at their squad, and there's just so much quality, even with Cancelo not around. There's a staggering amount of talent in there, and it sort of snuck up on me a bit, because I've just been so sort of France obsessed, and obviously over here everybody's been talking England, but they're just so much better than they were 5 years ago. They're so much better than they were 5 years ago, and he you'd never want to write off Cristiano Ronaldo, particularly given that how strangely that evening went at the Stade de France back in 2016, when it was all meant to be about him and he ended up as an assistant manager. I just wonder whether he's got one final swan song at this level, and he might inspire something. You're right, it's a very difficult group, but you'd expect them to get out of the group, even if it was finishing third. And then beyond that, I wouldn't want to play them.
No. Well, England probably almost certainly will, it feels like. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting about Ronaldo, because if you look, I thought earlier on today, watching Lewandowski, that, you know, he clearly struggles playing for Poland compared to Bayern, obviously, and Messi has the same issue a lot of the time with Argentina, but Ronaldo has kind of risen above that through sort of sheer force of will. But you wonder whether it will backfire eventually, because he's on 49 direct free kicks at major tournaments. So pretty sure we'll see the 50th at some point against Hungary. He's only scored one. I mean, obviously, everyone remembers the one in that hat-trick against Spain at the World Cup. But, you know, technically, they now have a better free-kick taker in the form of Bruno Fernandes and possibly others as well. But none of them are going to get the ball off Ronaldo, are they? So his longevity is mad. Dennis Wise played in the last Euros that Ronaldo didn't score in. So just to kind of put some some context around that. So, yeah, I mean, I imagine he'll get a couple of penalties, a minor muscle injury and a bit of shouting. That's, yeah, my prediction.
Well, speaking of Dennis Wise, we're going to talk some more classic Euro stuff shortly. First, though, let's get some odds from Paddy Power and head over to Producer Ben.
Thank you very much, Matt. I am here with Graham Byrne from Paddy Power to look ahead to the two games tomorrow. We're going to start off with Hungary versus Portugal. Portugal, I imagine, are the red-hot favourites here. But, Graham, what sort of odds would I get Hungary to beat them?
Yeah, the prices at the moment, Hungary are 15-2, the draw is 16-5, and you're quite correct. Portugal are 2-5 red-hot favourites for this one, Ben. Now, Hungary, they are at home, they have got home advantage, they will have the crowd behind them over there, and 15-2 is a fair enough price, I reckon. Maybe they might think with João Cancelo going out with the COVID, he will be missing the game, that might unsettle the Portuguese a bit, but it's still got a lot to ask for. They have their own injury problems, they're missing one of their main men, Dominik Szoboszlai from RB Leipzig. He's a key influential midfielder for them. He scored a goal that qualified him from this, but he's got a hamstring, he'll be missing out on that, and he is a big hammer blow for the Hungarians. That is why they are 15-2. Portugal at 2-5, I think most people will be considering them to be banker material for this.
Okay, let's go on to the second game, which is France versus Germany. It's going to be a good game. Can you give me the markets, please, on France going 2 or more in this one?
Yeah, France at the moment are 8-5 to score 2 or more goals. It's going to be fascinating to see the team selection out there tomorrow. France, many people's favourites for it at the moment. They are 5-1 joint favourites with England for the tournament. But this is going to be an acid test for them here in this game against Germany. I think Germany are flying under the radar a bit here. But France are very much fancied by a lot of people to start banging in the goals. They've got the attacking talent from all over the park to get the goals. And if you fancy them to get 2 or more against Germany, 8-5 is the price for that.
The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power. Place a 4+ fold bet builder on any football match and get money back as a free bet if one leg lets you down. Check paddypower.com for more details.
£10 max free bet. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On this day in Euros history, 15th of June, the 2-0 win for England over Scotland at Euro 96, 25 years ago today. Gazza's goal, Yuri Geller's role in Gary McAllister's penalty miss. He moved the ball for us with the power of his mind. He's since expressed regret for using his powers for unethical purposes. Okay.
That's ranking the top five. Yeah, let's not go there, but yeah.
Dom, I've got this vision of Phil Foden, blonde bonce and all, looping the ball over Grant Hanley's head and then volleying it past David Marshall, lying on his back, having a bottle of Lucozade Sport sprayed into his mouth, and then, uh-oh, here comes the VAR review, goal ruled out. Yeah, and we lose that magic moment.
For being derivative.
I actually wonder whether Jack Grealish plays in this game rather than Phil Foden.
Yeah.
Actually, just to scupper this from the start. I do think that it might be a chance for England to just demonstrate the depth of quality they have in those areas. And they don't need to play all these guys every week and every game rather. And you know, you've got Foden there. You mentioned all the City players previously in the Portugal section. Maybe there's an opportunity there to swap them around and give Grealish a run from the left.
Duncan, you pointed out the other day that win against Scotland in 96 was one of two that England managed in that glorious Euro 96 campaign.
in
90 minutes. And even that game, like, you know, England won it 2-0, but it was really close up until McAllister missed the penalty. And it was kind of that and Jamie Redknapp coming on at halftime that changed it.
Massive, yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot more oral histories of Euro 96 than there were England wins in that tournament. But yeah, it was that game was incredibly tense because England really had blown it against Switzerland, obviously taking the lead and then drawn. And yeah, if that penalty had gone in, it was it would have been a disaster, I think. I don't even think they would have recovered because they were not playing well at all. I mean, first half, England were atrocious against Scotland. But, you know, Gazza, etc. I mean, if we're going to complete the Spotify references for the night, that game was famously referenced in The First Big Weekend by Arab Strap. And they one line is like, they planned to watch England game but fell asleep and awoke to find out that England had won 2-0. So there you go.
Pat Nevin, if you're listening, I'm sure you enjoyed that very much. Back to 2021 or Euro 2020. Up to 45,000 spectators will be allowed into Wembley for the knockout stages games which are being played there. It's clearly not as significant as the Wimbledon tennis tournament, but it's better than 22,500, I suppose.
Yeah, it's been great, hasn't it? Let's be honest. It's been great the last few days hearing proper crowd noise, hearing a din. Even, I mean, that go back to the Hampden Park and that pre-match din, which is drowning out Steve Clark's pre-match press conference or pre-match media briefing that's taking place on the touchline and he can't hear the reporter who's 5 yards away. I mean, that is brilliant. That's what we've been craving for 15, 16 months. So absolutely fantastic. There'll be people there and more people there. Hopefully it works in England's favour later in the tournament. But I mean, I can't wait to hear the noise in Hungary. I mean, if they've got 60,000 people turning up there, I mean, remarkable they're doing that. But it's going to be like the old times, isn't it? Back in the old days, remember when we got people in the stadium? Fantastic.
Unlike Euro 96, eh? Yeah.
They didn't even sell out Euro 96, did they? There were actually empty seats in those stadiums.
City Ground and St James's Park both had sub 20,000 people games. So, but you know, greatest summer ever. So,
in terms of a bold prediction for Tuesday, Dom, are you going to give Hungary the W because they're going to be backed by a fervent and massive crowd? Is there anything else that you're hoping they're expecting to see from the matches coming up on Tuesday?
No, I want to see evidence that these stellar three teams in that group are as good as we think they are, really, and I imagine that's what we will witness. I agree with Duncan. I mean, the second match will be probably greatly shaped by what happens in Budapest, but I'd expect Portugal to stamp their authority all over that fixture. It would be a surprise if they didn't, even in the face of 60,000 Hungarian supporters, and then everything about the Germany-France game is mouthwatering. It's just going to be, I mean, those are two properly elite teams coming up against each other. And if there's been an element of, it's been great. I've enjoyed the tournament so far, but aside from the sort of the unlikely comeback by the Ukrainians against the Dutch, we haven't really had a game which has been properly end-to-end where both teams are going at each other and scoring goals and have the capacity to open each other up. There have been a lot of matches where one team has been very, very obviously blunt in front of goal, and for all their best efforts, they can't really hope to prize the other one apart. And here we've got a chance for Germany and France to, you know, to show how the other half live.
Duncan, you got something big and bold that's going to happen on Tuesday? Maybe Portugal get a penalty and Ronaldo picks up the ball and says, "Here you go, Bruno, you can have this one, mate."
Yeah. Yeah, this is for you. I mean, Ronaldo might try and score from a direct free kick from inside his own half, maybe. I don't know. But I mean, remember at the last Euros, this game was 3-3. They played each other then. It was one of the best games in the group stage. So another one of those would be good. And then in the France-Germany, I think we want a classic game. And I was trying to think, what's the classic score in a tournament game between two giants? I think 3-2 is probably the best score. 4-3 is a bit too many goals, isn't it? But so maybe like 2-2 going into the final 10 minutes and then a proper late winner from someone at either end. So, yeah. I mean, they're bound to both end 0-0 now, but let's hope.
3-2 is somebody coming back from 2-0 down, because we all know that that is...
That doesn't happen.
A very dangerous league. Yeah. Right, that'll wrap things up. We'll be back same time tomorrow to reflect on the effing action from Tuesday and look ahead to a pair of Group A games. Also, Finland versus Russia in Group B. Until then, many thanks to Dom, to Duncan, to Tomash, and of course to producer Charlie. Mainly to you, though, listener. Look forward to catching up again soon. Until then, from all of us here, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Head to theathletic.com/totally to find out all the latest subscription offers. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.